ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
This is hard to remember. Any idea what we chanted yesterday, what we discussed yesterday?
We worshiped.
That was the class in the evening. Yeah. But what did we do in the morning?
We did in the temple.
And the balance
was yesterday.
Well, I'm going to guess around verse 15. Chetak Pal Vasya Bandaya. We'll try that. Text number 15. Chetak Kalvasya Bandhaya
Chetak Kalvasya Bandhaya
Muktaye Chatmano Matam
Muktaye Chatmano Matam
Guneshu Saktam Bandhaya
Guneshu Saktam Bandhaya
Ratam Va Pungsi Muktaye Consciousness. Kalu. Indeed. Asya.
Of him.
Bandhaya.
Bandhaya.
For bondage.
For bondage.
Muktaye.
Muktaye.
For liberation.
For liberation.
And
Atmanaha
of the living entity Matam
is considered
Purneshu
in the three modes of nature
Sakta
attached
Bandhaya
for conditional life
Ratam
attached.
Va or
Pungsi
in the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
In the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Muktaye
for
liberation.
For liberation.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The stage in which the consciousness of the living entity is attracted by the three modes of material nature is called conditioned life. But when that same consciousness is attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is situated in the consciousness of liberation. Purport? There is a distinction here between Krishna consciousness and Maya consciousness. Guneshu, or Maya consciousness, involves attachment to the three material modes of nature, under which one works sometimes in goodness and knowledge, sometimes in passion, and sometimes in ignorance. These different qualitative activities, with the sensual attachment for material enjoyment, are the cause of one's conditional life. When the same chetak, or consciousness, is transferred to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, or when one becomes Krishna conscious, he is on the path of liberation. Consciousness is dharma of the living entity in the sense that it's an inseparable quality. We have desires, we have thoughts, we have sensory impressions, which come and go. The consciousness assumes the form of red color, yellow color, when we see a red thing or a yellow thing, our consciousness, anyway, the image impinges on our consciousness. But that's temporary. Happiness and distress, different sensory impressions come and go. But what is constant within for the soul is the consciousness itself. You could say that these thoughts become qualities of the soul. Thoughts, feelings, they're experienced by the self. So they're qualities of the self. But they're temporary qualities. The permanent, eternal quality of the soul The Atma is Chetas, consciousness. That is constant. The content of the consciousness will change, but the consciousness itself is permanent. And any concept of spiritual development, sadhana or self-realization, which involves obliteration of consciousness, such a concept has to be invalid, because it is something that cannot be done. Some do propose that. Not even the hardcore Advaitavadis have that idea, obliteration of consciousness. And even the Buddhists, I don't think any of them propose that as an actual goal, to obliterate consciousness. I guess, Parinirvanam is to obliterate everything. Okay, total annihilation. Yeah. Although I don't think that's really the idea of all the Buddhists. Yeah. When they say there is nothing, they mean, at least in the original version, there are no things. That's the Yogacara view, that there are no things, or Vijnanavad. There are no persistent things. There are just energy fields, which are constantly changing. So nothing remains the same, so there are no things. But it doesn't mean there's nothing, it's just there are no things. And there is no soul, anyway, to annihilate. There are no things, therefore there is no particular thing called Atma. So there's no question of mukti. Mukti is something that happens to the Atma. If you don't have an Atma, what are you talking about mukti? You can talk about where you're going to drive your car if you have a car. Now, if you don't have a vehicle, there's no question of where you're going to take it. So if you don't have, if there is no Atma, there's no sense talking about mukti or bondage or anything. There's nothing to be bound or to be freed. And there are actually some serious philosophers who propose, yes, there is an eternal soul, but his consciousness is not an eternal quality of his. And that therefore, like all other temporary qualities, it should be disposed of. And liberation means to become free of all material designations, all material qualities, including consciousness. And then you can enjoy the bliss of being a dead stone. But that's the followers of Gautama Rishi in the Nyaya school, they actually propose that this is perfection. To become free even from consciousness. Good luck. Some would like to do that, but it can't be done. This is the project of the intoxicated people, the Sharabis, drug addicts. They want to become free from consciousness. But you can't do it, actually. So consciousness is inseparable quality of the self. You've got to deal with it. And the other thing about consciousness is it's never, at least your consciousness, you're not God, so your consciousness is never independent. You don't have independent control over your own consciousness, what to speak of other things outside your consciousness. We're not in control. This is the next big thing to cope with, that we're not in control. And for people brought up in Western modern culture, that's the hardest. We're not in control. Even if you have all the money in the world, and you have a credit card, and you can purchase everything in the shopping malls, you're not in control at all. You know, this our whole culture, whole Western modern culture, is the illusion of being in control of your own life. They, you know, in the schools they teach you, the motto is you can become whatever you want to be. But it's a lie. You can't become what you want to be. You can't become practically anything you want to be. What to think of anything? The control is not there. It's an illusion. And so if you want to deal with reality, we have to understand we have consciousness, and that consciousness is going to be subordinate to higher force. We have to reckon with that. It's going to become attached. Just like if you have a plate of honey, the flies are going to get stuck in it. You know,
They can't help it. You know, they're not going to sit around and look at the honey. They're going to jump into it and drown. Like that, your consciousness is going to become attached to something. It's just a question of what you're going to let it to get attached to. You got one plate of honey and another plate of poison. So you can dive into the honey or dive into the poison. But you're gonna get stuck to something. So we can Guneshu Saktam or Pumsi Ratam. Saktam, Ratam are the same thing. Although maybe same idea of being stuck, being attached, but it's a different kind of attachment, therefore different words are used. When you're stuck to the modes, then you're sakti, you know, being stuck. And when you're attached to the Supreme Person, then you've got rati, transcendental enjoyment. So there are different effects of the two attachments, even though attachment is attachment. You know, it's what the mind does. It gets attached to things that it pays attention to. But according to the difference of the object of attachment, you get different results. Sakti and Rati are two different experiences. The experience of the conditioned souls is an experience of misery and confusion. The experience of the pure devotees is just the opposite. It's pure bliss and enlightenment. So that's what happens. That's what Chaitas does. It gets attached. Dhyayato Vishayam Pumsak Sangas Teshu Bajayate. You may take your life as just an aesthetic experience, like you're in an art gallery, and it's just paintings, just two-dimensional representations. There may be a battle scene with blood being shed and you know, bodies with their heads cut off, but you're not disturbed by it because it's just a painting. Even a little child, you know, can look at it and laugh. He's not scared that he's going to get his head cut off. It's just a painting. So we may take life as an aesthetic experience. We could just walk around, look at the pictures, and not become attached, we think. But Krishna warns us in the Gita. He tells us, you don't understand the real psychology, how the mind works. Dhyayato Vishayan. Pumsa, anybody, if he lets his mind ponder, even impartially, apparently, the objects of the senses, sangas teshu pajayate, inevitably he becomes attached to them. That's the same word, sangha, sakta. And that's the first stage of attachment. And it's defined, I think, by Prabhupada in the purport. Oh, that's okay. Just a couple of lines. Okay. Is when you start thinking that, yes, I can accept this. I can consider this my object of enjoyment. Why not? I can get involved with it. Let me contemplate this. It's interesting. So when you accept something as your object of gratification, that's sangha. But it goes further. It doesn't stop at that. That in itself is relatively innocuous. It's like the connoisseur with his observing his paintings at the exhibition. It doesn't really just change his life, but it goes deeper and further than that. Sangat sanjayate kama. Out of sangha develops kama. It's not just anymore I can have it, but I have to have it. That you've gone over the border from so-called goodness into passion. When you decide I've got to have it, and, you know, it's not so easy to get it. I got to do whatever is necessary to get it. That's kama. And kamat krodho bhujayate. It doesn't stop at that either. In the material world, you never get everything you want, even with all the best endeavors. You get frustrated always. Frustration leads to anger. Then you've stepped over the border into the next zone, the zone of ignorance. You know, krodha is a symptom of ignorance. Kama is a symptom of passion. Krodha is a symptom of ignorance. Krodha bhavati sammoha. Then you get confused. Sammoha smriti vibhrama. You forget who you are. Smriti, you forget that you're a civilized human being, and you start acting like a wild animal. screaming, yelling, and flipping out. Yeah. Ready to kill anybody or be killed because of your frustration and anger. Smriti Brahmshad Buddhi Nasha, then your intelligence is finished, ruined. Buddhi Nasha Pranasha, and you fall down from whatever standard of civilized understanding and behavior you are on. You get dragged down into the lower conditions of rajas and tamas. You become like a two-legged animal, or worse than animal. Human beings end up doing things that animals would never dare to do. All beginning with contemplation of the sense objects. That sakti, that getting stuck in the moods, drags us down. So therefore, as Kapila Dev is saying this, attached to the modes means bondage. It may start innocuously, but it gets heavier and heavier and drags you down lower and lower. But take the same unavoidable tendency of using the mind, or letting the mind become attached. Let it become attached to something good, not some nice picture in the art museum. That's material goodness. But the Supreme Lord and pictures of him in a different art museum, in Govinda's art museum, that will be built 20 years from now in Vrindavan. And BBT has plans to collect all the BBT paintings around the world and make a big museum. Yeah. But it's a dream for maybe 20 years from now. Mm-hmm. It will be very expensive to do. Anyway, that art museum, you can go around and contemplate the pictures and become completely attached to them, because that are the udipinas of devotional service. Then you become attached, Hare Krishna, to the Supreme Person. That is your means to liberation. Anyway, we all know this. I mean, you have to refocus your attention on Krishna, then you get liberation. Hare Krishna. Why don't we stop this verse? We can discuss it, and then I'll do the next verse also. Then we'll be caught up. Any questions or comments? Yes.
You just mentioned about the museum. You said it's very expensive. It's a dream. What? Very expensive to build a building? Or
yeah, to make a real museum. They don't want to just throw something together. They want to make a real museum, world standard. Okay. You know, and if you're going to have it out on Chatikar Road, it's going to have good security and everything. it'll be very expensive. You got to maintain the paintings nicely. You can't just let everything rot and get stolen. So they talked about it for about a half hour at the meeting. Then they realized how expensive it might be and said, okay, someday in the future.
Why Vrindavan is an international center, everybody.
Yeah, they were saying, it could be various places, but they thought that would be a good place. Anyway, that's just the first idea, maybe Vrindavan. Any questions about? I mean, it's pretty clear what the first verse is about. It's just an introductory statement. Oh, yeah, I'll read the next verse. 16. Aham mama bimano tai.
Aham mama bimano tai.
Kamalo badi bi malaih.
Kamalo badi bi malaih.
Vitam yada manak shuddham.
Vitam yada manak shuddham.
Adukama sukham samam.
Adukama sukham samam.
Aham mama bimano tai.
Aham mama bimano tai.
Kamalo badi bir malaih.
Kamalo badi bir malaih.
Vitam yada manak shuddham.
Vitam yada manak shuddham.
Adukama sukham samam.
Adukam.
I. Mama. Mine. Abhimana. From the misconception.
From the misconception.
Uttai. Produced.
Kama,
lust,
lobha,
greed,
adibihi,
and so on.
Malai,
from the impurities,
vitam,
freed,
yada,
when,
manaha,
the mind,
shuddham,
pure,
adukham,
without distress,
asukham,
without happiness,
sama,
equipoised.
It says equal poised. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Poised. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada.
No.
When one is completely cleansed of the impurities of lust and greed, produced from the false identification of the body as I, and the bodily possessions as mine, one's mind becomes purified. In that pure state, he transcends the stages of so-called material happiness and distress. Purport. Kama and Lobha are the symptoms of material existence. Everyone always desires to possess something. It is said here that desire and greed are the products of false identification of oneself with the body. When one becomes free from this contamination, then his mind and consciousness also become freed and attain their original state. Mind, consciousness, and the living entity exist. Whenever we speak of the living entity, this includes the mind and consciousness. The difference between conditional life and liberated life occurs when we purify the mind and the consciousness. When they are purified, one becomes transcendental to material happiness and distress. In the beginning, Lord Kapila has said that perfect yoga enables one to transcend the platform of material distress and happiness. How this can be done is explained here. One has to purify his mind and consciousness. This can be done by the bhakti yoga system. As explained in the Narada Pancharatra, one's mind and senses should be purified. Tatparatvena nirmalam. One's senses must be engaged in devotional service to the Lord. That is the process. The mind must have some engagement. One cannot make the mind vacant. Of course, there are some foolish attempts to make the mind vacant or void, but that is not possible. The only process that will purify the mind is to engage it in Krishna. The mind must be engaged. If we engage our mind in Krishna, naturally the consciousness becomes fully purified, and there is no chance of the entrance of material desire and greed. It's not enough to just hear and know theoretically these things. They have to be put in practice. So there is the Sankhya and the Yoga. They go together. Yoga is practice. You have to realize it in your life. Just you know that I am the spirit soul and my real attachment should be to the Supreme Person. You cannot realize that knowledge without some practice. Because you've been a conditioned soul. You are attached to matter. You've got your material problems. You've got to resolve them. You've got to counter them by a positive endeavor to redirect everything you have to Krishna. That sadhana, that yoga is required. Bhakti yoga system. You can practice Sankhya yoga system if you were living in Satya yoga and just sit and meditate. Krite yadhyayato vishnum. Meditation was effective in two million years ago. Nowadays, Arjuna 5,000 years ago confessed that he couldn't even try it. And Krishna agreed, yes, you're right, Arjuna. Asamya tatmana yoga dushprapa iti me mati. It is very hard to practice yoga if your mind is uncontrolled. You've got to have a purified consciousness before you can really practice yoga, especially just meditational yoga. The yoga system that is practiced
in the modern age is this hatha yoga system, which emphasizes a lot of exercises, you know, to get your body in shape and then begin to control the mind. You know, limber up your pranas and your nadis and your muscles and, you know, by asanas. Just, you know, get the pranas flowing a little smoothly. Then you can begin practicing pranayama. And by that breath control, the mind actually becomes subdued by pranayama. Then the stages of meditation, dharana, dhyana, then can be entered into. Step-by-step procedure. It doesn't even begin, as taught by, you know, Goruk, Nath, and the others in the modern age, the system of, even as taught by Patanjali in the original Yoga Sutras. First asanas, yama-niyama asana, then you can practice pranayama as the fourth step. And then there's a question of the mind actually being brought under control, only at that stage. Up to that, it's just preliminary physical exercises. So, if you're living 2 million years ago, you can think about sitting down and meditating. Otherwise, it's very difficult. You have to go through a whole lifetime of preparation even to begin trying to meditate in Kali Yuga. Or we have the Bhakti Yoga system. There's ancient Bhakti Yoga, as taught by Kapila to his mother, which is mostly a meditative system. There's the Bhakti Yoga, we can call it Gyana Mishra Bhakti, taught in certain Upanishads, like the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. There are various upasanas, which are more or less devotional, to different degrees. There are methods of devotional meditation in the Upanishads. Here in the Bhagavatam, we have Kapiladeva's instructions, a few other similar sets of instructions about how to practice various methods of devotional service. But this is ancient method. This kind of bhakti yoga, as it is, without adaptation, is also not very practical. It's also mostly meditation. So it's not very practical in Kali Yuga. In the Sri Sampradaya, they have the idea that bhakti yoga is not, we can't practice, you know, we learn that we can't practice meditational yoga. But the Sri Vaishnavas, the way they phrase it is we can't even practice bhakti yoga in Kali Yuga. Because their idea of bhakti yoga is the ancient discipline. And so their explanation is that bhakti yoga has become too difficult in Kali Yuga, too complicated for us. We just practice prapatti, you know, surrender, just offer ourselves helplessly at Krishna's feet and beg for help. We can't do anything else. And we agree with that. It's just a different way of phrasing it. Prabhupada talks about what we're doing as bhakti yoga. But it's, you know, it's applying the term differently. There's not no contradiction. No contradiction in those two viewpoints. Just what do you mean by bhakti yoga? The ancient system or the modern adaptation given to us by Rupa Goswami and the other devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is sarvanga naipunam, in all ways serviceable and practical. The bhakti yoga that we've learned. Prabhupada refers to Narada having taught this bhakti yoga system in the Narada Pancharati, but that's also pretty ancient. If you read the kind of method of practice that Narada teaches in his Pancharatra, at least the Narada Pancharatra has many chapters and we only have a small part of it. It's the Yogasara section of the Narada Pancharatra is what still exists. The rest of it is lost. But that, what is in there, is also a pretty difficult system. Although it's mostly mantra meditation and deity worship. It's not the Patanjali system or just sitting down and meditating. But even what's involved, before you can chant your Gayatri, you've got to go through a 45-minute rigmarole of nyasas and mudras of all sorts. That we are most of us foregoing. Any ISKCON devotee who can spend 45 minutes preparing to chant his Gayatri is underengaged. So we don't exactly follow the literal method of the Narada Pancharatra either. Our Pancharatra, you know, are the instructions of Rupa Goswami and Gopal Bhatta Goswami. This is our methodology, as given to us by Srila Prabhupada. Simple method, mostly chanting Hare Krishna. You know, and then we have our four regulative principles, and we take a second initiation and receive the Gayatri Mantra, but we don't spend 3 hours a day chanting our Gayatri. Simple system of Bhakti Yoga, but extremely effective. According to Narada's definition in his Pancharatra, quoted by Rupa Goswami at the beginning of the Bhakti Rasamrita to Sindhu. Tatra Tvena Nimalam. First line?
Sarvopadi
Vinirmuktam. Tatpara Tvena Nirmalam. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchite. And Rupa Goswami identifies that as a definition of pure devotion, not just mixed devotion. Although the word pure is not there, but it matches so closely to his own definition just given before it of Shuddha Bhakti that it's equivalent. Narada is also not teaching mixed devotion, at least not according to his definition. Anyabhilashata shunyam, free of other ulterior motives. Tatparatvena, it's actually just dedicated tat, to him, to Krishna, to the Lord who's being worshipped. It's done for the pleasure of the Lord. That's bhakti. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Take your senses and use them for the service of the master of the senses. That epithet, master of the senses, is understood by everybody to mean Lord Vishnu. Now, nobody else is the master, as can be called Rishikesha. You may call a yogi Rishikesha, but that's only in a secondary sense. The real Rishikesha, the real master of the senses, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And seva means doing work that will please him. That's what makes it service. It's what he wants done. If I'm engaged in the service of a corporation, when I do what they want me to do, that's service. When I do something else, then I'm goofing off. That can't be called service. If they're paying me to do a particular job and I'm sitting in my office, you know, playing Pac-Man on my screen instead, then that's not service. So service means to do what Krishna wants, what pleases him. That's a very nice definition of Bhakti Yoga. And we've got the practical method. You know, we know theoretically what we're supposed to do. And we're given very serviceable and practical means of doing that. Chant Krishna's name every day, at least a minimum amount, with all attention. Hear Krishna's instructions and the instructions of his devotees in the Gita and Bhagavatam every day regularly, sitting in the assembly of devotees. And then go out and do some practical service. Rishi can't take your senses and use them for Krishna. And just sit in a corner and space out in the name of reading or of meditating or worshipping. Do something practical. You're meditating, if you're qualified, if you're fit, you may be able to sit and meditate for Krishna or sit and worship for Krishna. But it has to be something practical that actually satisfies the Lord. You know, whatever it is. That's our method. Okay, any questions or comments?
Hare Krishna.
You can go if you want. But come back after breakfast. Come back. There's some work to do. I'll give you some job afterwards. Yeah.
The painting will be finished today.
Good.
These staircases and the veranda, there was no paint. Yesterday I brought 5 kg of another.
Okay.
Now it will be completed by this.
Okay. But you can
come. It has been repaired and done in a couple.
Yes.
And now paint of both those in the mirror will take place.
Okay.
And you will see when we have money, we will do it.
Okay.
Otherwise, it is quite.
Any questions?
Yes. Yeah. Have you noticed, is there any groups practicing Hatha Yoga who get beyond the stage of pranayama these days?
I don't know. You know, Iyengar claimed that he was practicing dhyana, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
nowadays, several groups are pushing Ashtanga yoga, and they claim to be pursuing all eight.
All eight. Yeah.
What's their idea of dhyana?
Well, you're going to
float up to the ceiling. And
I don't really think anybody is really that serious about it, but they call it Ashtanga yoga, so.
Hey.
They seem to be pursuing that at least as a goal.
I mean, in his book on Light on Pranayama, Mr. Iyengar has a chapter in the back about dharana a little bit. And I got some Mayavadi books on how to practice dharana. It's practically based on tantric practices. Tantric practices, you know, tamasic tantric practices. So it gets pretty messy.
Well,
it's pretty ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's at least what they say in these books.
Patanjali also in his Yoga Sutra. He gives a whole list of things that one, arbitrary items that one might meditate on, you know, dia flame or something like that.
Yes.
But then at the end of his list he says, Ishwara pranidhanad va.
Ah.
Or just fix your mind on Krishna.
Yeah.
Yes, so we're already practicing dharana in Vienna.
I think Patanjali Ishwara is not Krishna
though. Oh?
Ishwara, well.
Oh. He's a Shaiva, but I think he would allow Vaishnavas to worship Krishna.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no problem with that.
He allows you to fix your mind on a candle flame.
Yeah, why not Vishnu?
Why not Vishnu?
Anyway, it works. You know, meditate on Vishnu and you will achieve samadhi.
Can I say what you achieve in Radha Kunda? For
yeah.
Yesterday came to Radha Kunda. It was not Monday, it was Tuesday. But usually they worship what you on Monday. And it was blocked, so he was sitting, he was sweating hard, sitting on the Supreme Lord, too, you know, that is really hot. So this big block of 50 kilos of ice, white on the bottom, and...
Where? Kundeshwara?
Kundeshwara Mahadeva and Radha Kunda, this one who is at Alanya Center. And dark blue, peaks of white mass all over him, and even they put garage on one ice, you know, dark blue, and blue, light blue, and red, and blue, all colors, and he was sitting there, all temple is covered with these blocks and the tons of ice.
Yeah?
Just for crawling and
but it wasn't colored ice.
It's colored, all colored.
Oh.
And the bottom is white, but then it's all colored, you know, so more like it's kind of wow.
Just to call the Lord out.
Yeah.
That's their favorite.
Yeah.
First time I went to Nathwar, Srinathji Temple, it was middle of summer. And they have pipes that go all along the perimeter of the roof with holes drilled at regular intervals.
Yes.
And you turn on the current and they have rose water flowing
yes.
through the thing and it comes out of fine mist and sprays.
Yeah, that's Rajput technology. That's how they had in the palaces back then.
In
yeah.
the palace?
Yeah, yeah. Umber and other places they had that kind of plumbing.
I had one question about the Tathagata Nirmala in that verse.
Yes.
So in the 10th canto there's an off-quoted verse. This is Prayers of the Personified Vedas, I believe, 88?
87 is Prayers.
Oh, anyway. So it's Harir Hinirvana Sakshat.
Oh, that's the story of Bhikkhu Muni going to see the three lords. 88.
Prakate Purushaha Prakateha Paraha Sasaravadrig Upatrishta Tam Bhajan Nirguno Bhave.
Yes.
I was wondering if you can comment on that.
Yeah, by worshipping Hari, you also become transcendental to the modes.
Yeah.
A devotee of Vishnu, only Mami Vayepa Pajante Mayame Tam Tarantite, only those who take shelter of me can go beyond the bondage of the modes of Maya. You can become Niyogana. So if you want to become Niyogana, you've got to worship Hari. And then I think the next verse talks about Lord Shiva, who was actually connected with the three modes. Shiva Shakti, Shakti Yuta, something. But it's a fact that Lord Shiva is deputized. He's got power to give liberation, but not independently. He's just an agent for Krishna. He's selling liberation, like they're selling, you know, some internet service, but they, you know, it's not independently. They're just selling a package manufactured by somebody else. It's like that. Shiva and his wife can give someone liberation, but the power, the actual blessing is coming from Vishnu. They're just deputized to distribute. That's explained in Bhagavatam, too. Isn't the Shiva Shakti Yuta?
No.
The verse before or after?
Yeah, but the context, as I recall, is that he's asking, how is it that Krishna can become... It's in regards to... Yeah, I don't see that verse here.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of another one, then, another context.
Yeah, I'm hearing you. You're correct. It's the third verse.
After.
No, before. Shiva Shakti Yuta Shashwat Trilingo Guna Samvritaha Vaikarikas Taijasascha Tamasascetyaham Pritha.
Aha.
Tato Vikara Abhavan Shodashan Ishu Kanchana Udhavan Vibhuti Nam Sarvasama Shrute Gatim. And then he quotes,
so it's in the context of contrasting him with Lord Shiva.
Yeah, because he was asking, I believe, why is it that Vishnu devotees are all very poor and Shaivas are all very rich? I think that's the context. And he said, you have to understand what wealth really means.
Yes.
It means speaking to your devotees.
That's wealth, yeah. Then you can have anything you want. Thank you. Should we stop? Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. I can't figure out how to stop a recording. Because I